I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, and I'm in recovery from the use of internet pornography. Hello, my name is Jim.
Hey, Jim.
I'm the second of five children born into a loving Catholic home of two parents who celebrated 53 years of marriage this year and who provided a stable home environment for the five of us children. I grew up with all of my needs being met, food, clothing, shelter, and security. But I do recall times of tension between my parents whenever they sat down each month to pay the bills, which I internalized as there not being enough money, and it was a worry I was aware of during my growing up years. The fear of there not being enough, whether it was money, time, love, or attention, was something I've had to work through in my work here at Celebrate Recovery, but more on that later. My dad grew up in rural Idaho and had experienced the loss of his mother when he was 16 after a long and painful battle with cancer. Other than her early death, there weren't many stories of my paternal grandmother growing up. My mom grew up as the oldest in a family of four and two raging and abusive alcoholic parents. I was only aware of the alcoholism growing up as my maternal grandmother gained sobriety after divorcing my grandfather and attended Alcoholics Anonymous. She celebrated 20-plus years of sobriety before her death in her late 50s. I was not aware of the abuse that happened to my mother until she addressed it in recovery once I was off to college. So that trauma unconsciously colored her behavior as I was growing up. One dynamic that I vividly remember from my childhood is my mother often smiling and saying that everything is fine when stress was building up in her life, but later in the day or week, hitting a tipping point and exploding in anger with yelling and sometimes the slamming of cupboards or doors. My siblings and I would immediately head outside or to our rooms while my dad would intervene to calm her down. It was a pattern I observed regularly and internalized and carried it into my adulthood. Some of the messages I took in as an adolescent were that I was lazy, selfish, not doing what I was supposed to do, and that conflict is to be avoided. I learned to do whatever it takes to avoid conflict and to try to prevent those outbursts of anger. I would try to be good, and when conflict arose, I would apologize or take responsibility for everything, or suppress what I wanted or needed to preserve harmony. But in giving up that part of myself, I now see that I repeated some of those behaviors in my own acting out, whether it was immersing myself in work, looking to escape in food, alcohol, or sex. For me, when I didn't want to feel feelings, I would either look for a physical outlet in the form of playing a sport such as basketball or running, or get busy with work, because accomplishments get you recognition, which reinforced my behavior of getting busy when having feelings I preferred to avoid. It was also a reaction to being labeled lazy as a youth. Another behavior I would use to feel better was to eat, especially treats like ice cream, cake, or candy. For much of my life, I had a high-calorie metabolism that allowed me to use food for comfort without having the accompanying weight gain. That stopped being true in my 40s, and now this is another area that I'm examining to see if I'm trying to avoid feelings through food. My vices to avoid feelings are food, alcohol, sex, and work, which is not very relational. However, I do recognize God's hand in helping me over the years to reject certain habits, addictions, or vices. One, around the age of 10, I stole a pack of non-filtered Camel cigarettes from my grandmother's suitcase, and I smoked the whole thing in 30 minutes and became sick to my stomach, never to be able to stand the smell of cigarette smoke again. Two, when I was 14 and working on a farm, I took a big snuff of Copenhagen Chew, only to get sick, lose my lunch, and never touch it again. Or twice in college, when I overdid it with alcohol, only to get terribly sick and not to repeat it again. Although that experience didn't cause me to give up alcohol, it did rein in getting stumbling drunk. Alcohol has played a part in lowering my inhibitions, and it's something I must be aware of constantly to interrupt negative behavior from my hurts, habits, and hang-ups. As a young boy, I was full of energy, never eager to sit still, and full of life. I loved to play, run, and laugh. When I was age 6 or 7, I was sexually molested by an aunt who was a teenager at the time. Up to this point, I was very innocent about human sexuality and any feelings of lust or shame. But following that experience, I was confused and overly aware of my sexual desires and often filled with shame. I told no one of that experience as she was family, and that wasn't something my family talked about. I grew up with a passion for sports. My dad was a football and baseball star growing up, earning a sports scholarship in college and playing minor league baseball. I always looked up to him and wanted to excel at sports. In grade school and middle school, I enjoyed playing basketball and baseball. My freshman year of high school, I grew 6 inches and became uncoordinated and slow, barely making sports teams I tried out for. It was hard not to feel hurt by rejection at ranking at the bottom of the team and watching games from the sidelines. But by my junior year, my body caught up with my growth and I excelled at sports. I took pride in going from the guy on the bubble of being cut from a team to a starter. Sports became a way of getting recognition, acceptance, as well as a physical outlet for stress. God and church were always a part of my life growing up. I was baptized into the Catholic Church as an infant, went through first reconciliation and first communion as a second grader, then received confirmation in eighth grade. I continued my Catholic education in an all-boys high school, attending retreats my junior and senior years that were transformative in my spiritual growth as well as my relationship with my classmates. I had a prayer class my junior year that helped me develop a personal relationship and prayer life with Christ. I was skinny most of my growing up years and found myself shy about girls when I was in middle school. As I wasn't the muscular, handsome, or the confident guy I figured most girls were interested in. I did date regularly through my high school years and had a serious girlfriend my senior year and into my freshman year of college. I enjoyed the feeling of being in love and the affection that we shared. Once away at college, I could see that the two of us were too different to be together long term, so I broke it off. Later that year, I met a young lady who had been married and divorced, came from a broken family, and was hungry for approval and affection. I viewed myself as a hero, the one who could show her love and respect. I would gauge my worth by how she felt about me and life in general. Within 6 months of our dating, I started to realize I was feeling tremendous pressure to be her everything, and that her happiness was dependent on me. And as a 19-year-old, it was more than I could handle. I broke off our relationship and found myself depressed. As the fall trimester ended my sophomore year, my depression, sleep deprivation, and drinking at an end-of-term party landed me in a state where I was exhausted and in a fog where I could not tell what was going on in conversations or interactions with others. It was a scary time for me. I went home on break, and my parents asked how things were going, and I told them much of what I was experiencing: loneliness, spiritual isolation. Often I would open the Bible and find the reading very dry, feeling like I was the only Christian at school, although I was not living it, and emotionally exhausted. My parents asked if they could lay on hands and pray over me. My parents had been actively involved in the Catholic Charismatic Renewal in the 70s, and when I was in high school, I told them, "That's okay for you, but I'm not interested in the laying on of hands or speaking on tongues or any of that." But because I was at such a low point in my life, I said, sure, why not? It can't hurt. They prayed over me and asked that God bring Christians into my life who would support me and help me grow in my relationship with God. When I returned to college that winter term, I was at my desk doing homework when my roommate asked, "Hey, there's a new Bible study starting up with a minister from the United Evangelical Free Church here on campus. Would you like to come with me?" I said yes, grabbed my Bible, and out the door we went. We started with the Gospel of Mark, and the words just leapt off the page and spoke straight to my heart and quenched a deep thirst. Much of the scripture I had heard growing up, but had laid fallow, and now it sprouted and flourished. I developed a strong relationship with the people in the Bible study and became personal friends, truly an answer to the prayer my parents had prayed when I had been home on break. For the next 18 months, I intentionally did not date as I needed some time for my own personal growth and healing. My wife and I met each other at church. I was in formation with a Franciscan religious order to become a Catholic priest, and my wife was in the church choir and had signed up to serve in the Peace Corps in the Dominican Republic. The Catholic priesthood requires men to profess a lifetime of celibacy and to forego being married. While I thought that God might be leading me into the priesthood, I struggled with the idea of not having a wife and children. I wanted to hold another person and be held. My wife and I would get to know each other in the coming months through activities at the church, prayer services, serving dinners, youth ministry, and serving in a homeless shelter. In the early spring of that year, I left the formation program, and my wife canceled her trip into the Peace Corps. Later that fall, we were married, and the following year, we welcomed our son into the world. 2 years later, our daughter was born, and we were complete as a family. I worked in the high-tech industry, and my wife was a stay-at-home mother and a homemaker. We raised our kids and got them through college, all while having our ups and downs as a family. My first experience with pornography came in the form of magazines that I came across at relatives' or friends' houses throughout my growing up years. My first time viewing a magazine was during my middle school years. I found that it stirred up lust and a distorted view of human sexuality and beauty. It wasn't something I sought out even in my adulthood, as I wasn't about to go into a store and purchase a magazine or go into an adult video store and check out material. It wasn't until internet pornography became available that I found myself viewing pornography with any regularity. Each time I viewed pornography, I would feel guilt and shame, and I would vow not to do it again. I'd go to confession and then be good for another 30 or 60 days until something would happen that would have me feeling things I wanted to avoid, whether it was rejection, anxiety, fear, loneliness. I would turn to pornography as an escape. Looking back, Paul's letter to the Romans, chapter 7, verse 15, resonated with my life. I do not understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate. In the fall of 2014, my wife and I took a marriage enrichment class at church that was developed by a Christian counseling organization. As we attended classes and worked through the chapters of a workbook, we arrived at chapter 7 about honesty. The author asserted, "No area of your life should be kept secret. All of your spouse's questions should be answered fully and completely." So on November 8, 2014, I shared with my wife that for the past 6 to 8 years, I struggled on occasion with pornography use. She was devastated by this news and deeply hurt by my unfaithfulness. In my mind, I had compartmentalized pornography usage as a thing completely disconnected from relationship, as an inanimate object. For my wife, it was the same as another person. It was a betrayal of my marriage vows. For the next few weeks, we were not able to live under the same roof as the hurt was too deep. I sat down with my kids and my daughter-in-law and confessed my struggle with pornography and the resulting hurt in our marriage. As they were all young adults, my wife and I were not going to fake that everything was okay between us, and I took responsibility to explain the cause of our separation. Again, with the hindsight of working a step study, I would advise getting counsel from a sponsor or CR leader prior to sharing with extended family members and possibly impacting them. We received a recommendation for a Christian counselor to begin meeting with the hopes of healing ourselves in our marriage. After a couple of meetings, he suggested going to a meeting at a church in Boring, Oregon that has small groups for guys struggling with pornography and for their spouses who've been impacted by it. Through some searching, we found a meeting at Good Shepherd Community Church in Boring. After attending our first meeting, we discovered there were Celebrate Recovery communities across the Portland metro area and found one closer to home, landing here in Rolling Hills. I've been coming here ever since. I attended a step study hosted by David and Ron later that spring and found a sponsor. Through the step study, I could work through many of the hurts I experienced through my lifetime. I was holding on to resentment and unforgiveness that I had not examined. The format of the step study allowed me to share freely with my brothers in Christ, who listened, loved me, and journeyed with me as I worked through the muck and mire of my life. It was very healing during my step 4, lesson 8, not only to create a searching and fearless moral inventory of the wrongs that I've done, but also a list of the positives. As Lamentations 3:40 says, "Let us examine our ways and test them." I examined all my ways, both the good and the bad. The balanced approach was extremely helpful. When I got to step 9, which says, "We made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others," I recognized that it was too late, as it related to the confession to my wife. I had bluntly gone and confessed to her and gained my freedom from secrecy and shame, but at an unacceptable price to her sanity and her heart. If you're a newcomer and walk through these doors for the first time, or someone who's not yet done a step study, find an experienced sponsor and learn from their wisdom and counsel before acting on some of the 12 steps, especially step 9, making amends. Working through the step study on my hurts, habits, and hangups, I can now address feelings and thoughts as they surface through the incredible fellowship and support of the guys in my small group and my step study. I no longer isolate when I'm having a hard time. I no longer put pressure on my wife to provide all my emotional needs. I can check in with her, and if she's not able to say yes to listening to me, I reach out to the guys who support me and get the support I need. In the past, I would not have risked rejection from other men, but through this program, the building of trust, I now have guys that love me no matter what. I was working with a Christian counselor who used the metaphor of going into the ditch on the side of the road for failing to uphold commitments or giving up sobriety. He asked me to examine what are the things on the shoulder of the road that can lead to the ditch. For me, it's using alcohol when I'm alone. It's surfing the internet, especially sites that target men, such as sporting sites. And it's not reaching out to others when I'm hurting. In the CR program, we refer to things that can cause us to go into the ditch as triggers. I have a job that requires frequent travel. Being on the road can create feelings of stress, loneliness, and isolation. One step my wife has generously offered is to travel with me on business trips for both short trips as well as longer times away from home. Having home away from home is a privilege and a help. But for those times when I travel alone, I have attended CR meetings in other cities and benefited from fellowship while away from home. While it takes time to look up meetings, scouting them in advance, and making a commitment ahead of time to go, it is a good way to set up a successful trip. Other things I do is to ask the front desk to disconnect the cable TV when I check in. I bring pictures of my wife and kids and place them around the hotel room. When I'm out to dinner or at a business meeting, I avoid all alcohol, as that can lower my inhibitions and become a trigger. I call my wife as I'm going to bed and discipline myself to go to bed at a reasonable hour. Each of these steps have been a tremendous help to avoiding triggers in my life. I'm so thankful to have found the CR community here at Rolling Hills, the weekly meetings and small group where I can share my ups and downs without judgment have been healing and affirming. I'm thankful for my accountability partners who hold me to my word and encourage me on the journey, and to the guys who act as my sponsors and respond to texts or calls when I hit a patch of rough road. If this is your first time at Celebrate Recovery, keep coming back, as it is a loving and healing community. And thank you all for listening tonight.